right, folks, we're back. This is Scotty Roberts, and I have, of course, my cohort, John Ward, who is not on the deck of his dahabeah floating on the Nile River near Luxor, Egypt. John, you're in Sweden, right?
I am indeed. Wonderful, beautiful, rainy, windy, thundery, lightning Sweden.
I suppose it's got to be a change to be walking to the marketplace and seeing all blonde heads and blue eyes as opposed to all your Egyptian neighbors.
Just a tad. Just a tad. It does turn one's head.
I suppose. Well,
one has to avert one's eyes.
I'm averting my eyes, oh Lord. That's my Monty Python for the day. So we have got a wonderful guest with us. His name is Timothy Freak. Timothy is somebody whose work I have followed for a long time. I first picked up his book, The Jesus Mysteries, some years ago, and was very intrigued by that as I was dealing with some of the questions of my own in those arenas. And John, as you know, me being the biblicist of the two of us, you being the biblical minimalist.
Don't know it.
you'll probably enjoy some of the things we talk about tonight. And let me give you just a brief. We've got Timothy just standing there or sitting there waiting for us. But let me give you a very brief. It's just from his website. You can go to themysteryexperience.com and see a lot about Timothy right there. But he's a stand-up philosopher, which was something that really intrigued me, that title. He calls himself a stand-up philosopher. We'll have him explain what that is. I have kind of... And Timothy, I hope you don't mind. I kind of stole that from you, and I've called myself a stand-up philosopher at times based on some of the things I do, but I think you are the real defining point for that. That's a concept
that... I was going to say, that's never really worked for you, though, has it, really?
Yeah, quiet over there in Sweden. It's from the ancient idea of the philosophers as the traveling spiritual entertainers. It's like sitting at the feet. Could you imagine sitting at the feet of Socrates or sitting at the feet of Aristotle and listening to them? I have to only imagine in my head that these guys weren't dry. Like they wouldn't say, turn in your papyrus to scroll number 4 and we're going to talk about... I think these guys were energetic. They had something. But he's pioneering this accessible new way to experience what he calls a profound spiritual awakening. Now, John and I, Timothy, and by the way, welcome, Timothy.
Thank you. Thank you for that marvelous introduction.
Well, thank you.
He tries his best, Timothy.
Yeah, I try.
You can expect papers from my solicitor about taking the stand-up course.
Only if he's wearing a white powdered wig, then I'll be happy. I just heard recently, because of the 4th of July here, I saw some British comic doing a routine, and he said, there's so many things, he says, from Great Britain that you would have, that you don't have now because you separated from us 240 years ago. He says, and one of them is, he says, you could go to court and have a judge with a white powdered wig. And he says, think of the change that would bring to your system of jurisprudence. Tim,
the health service, of course.
And the health service, yes. Ours is pretty botched up at the moment. Well, we won't go into that.
China teacups and a couple of biscuits.
John gets me started on politics without even knowing it. And he'll say, oh, Scotty, you said, don't go there. And I'm like, you started it. So, Timothy, I was, as I just mentioned, I was first drawn to your work by reading the Jesus Mysteries, and I want to talk about some of that stuff, but not right away. The first thing I'd like to get into is, John and I are, some of the things we do, the things we talk about, the books we write, we're in that more academic realm, but we try to bridge that gap between academia and fringe theory, fringe history, fringe philosophy, things like that. And John and I, by far, are not your dry, stodgy scholars and sitting in a, you know, some kind of office somewhere. We like to get out there and get our hands on, and there's definitely the emotional side and the spiritual side that we have. Sometimes you have to downplay that. Sometimes you play that up very big. So I'm very interested in what you do beyond some of the works. And I might say here that the books of yours I've read aren't stodgy, scholarly books. They are books that have intent that's different than just getting across historical information or scholarly information. And that leads me to ask you about the mystery experience. This is something that you have, you're pioneering this. You say here that it's a new way to experience a profound spiritual awakening that fully embraces our tender, vulnerable, flawed humanity, and that you've spent your life exploring the awakened state that you call the mystery experience. So tell us about that. What is that?
Well, I think, you know, I'm a great believer. If you're going to do historical books like the Jesus Mysteries, controversial books, then you do need to be scholarly. And whilst my friend and co-author Peter Gandy and I, when we wrote that, we'll discuss why that's controversial, I'm sure, later. But when we wrote that, I felt like everything we said, we needed to be able to footnote, we needed to be able to justify. And whilst we wanted to make it an accessible, enjoyable read, we needed that. But also, I guess I never ended up in mainstream academia because it felt as if it was playing some sort of game whereby you, as if you were actually detached from life itself and could just observe it from some dispassionate place. And I don't feel that. I feel like I'm right in the middle of the mystery of life. That's where I find myself. I'm a curious human being, alive and having this amazing experience, and I don't know what it is. And the only reason I'm bothering to write, which, as you know, I'm sure from your experience, takes an immense amount of time and effort, is to communicate with other interested, curious human beings who are also going, yeah, what is this experience of life that we're having? How can we understand the past? How can we look to the future? And most importantly of all, what is it that's happening right now? So my interest is far from detached. I feel like when I write a book, there's an agenda, and unashamedly so. And my central preoccupation is not with the history of spirituality, although I've written a lot of books on just about all of the different spiritual traditions of the world, looking into what they're saying and why. My main interest is my own strange journey through life. And that started for me, my spiritual journey, if you like, although it's a word I'm not very keen on, to be
sure,
honest.
Sure.
But that journey, which gets called spiritual, started for me when I was very young, when I was 12 years old, with a spontaneous awakening, what would be called an awakening, and a change of state. And from that moment on, my major interest in life has been, what the hell is this other state that human beings can enter and which I can enter? How can I explore it? How can I share it with others? And who are these people that in the past have already been exploring that, and what can they teach me? And all of the books on Christianity, and indeed Hinduism and Buddhism and Sufism and shamanism, and all of my personal explorations through those in a very practical way as well, has been about this other state, which people call being awake, because it just feels like you're more awake.
You know, something that I've said about the things that John and I are engaged in here, with Intrepid Magazine, with Paradigm Symposiums, with the books that we write, the things that we do. We do these things because they're the things that we like to do. It's the things that drive us passionately.
Yes.
Now, I'm gleaning from what you're saying is that is what you are doing. You're saying you are exploring who you are, why you're here, what you're doing. But you mentioned this spiritual awakening when you were a young lad. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it happened. I mean, my experience of being a young boy was, it felt to me as if all of the adults were in some sort of coma. Because
much like John.
Because yeah. It seemed to me that this incredible thing was happening. I was alive. I had no idea why. I had no idea what it was. And it felt like none of the adults did either. It's just they were pretending they did. And with that innocent view of a child, it just seemed preposterous that no one was sitting there. Why everyone, in fact, wasn't, I still have this, wasn't constantly going, well, what's going on? You know, what is this? What's this experience we're having? What is this? What is reality? What is identity? What is... You know? And one day, just sitting on this little tiny hill in this very ordinary town where I was born, in the West Country of England, I went so far, I think, now I would probably what happened, was I just became so immersed in the mystery of life that this spontaneous shift, I would say now being deep awake, happened. And the hallmarks of that, as has been found by countless people through the many generations, is a profound sense of oneness, and an enormous experience of love, of connectedness, but a visceral, sensual connectedness that reaches right from the body up to the deepest part of ourself. And it was a huge feeling of relief, of coming home, of familiarity, and yet also a big surprise, very paradoxical. And
you, Jim,
it made a big impression on me.
If you don't mind me asking you that.
Not at all.
I can sympathize with everything you've just said, and what do you think it is that stops others from having that experience? And what I mean by that, let me just try and clarify that, in the way in which they probably are having that experience, but there's something inherent either around them in their own environment or their upbringing or consciously happening or subconsciously happening that prevents them from experiencing that experience. It's as if it's filed away, and so one cannot experience it anymore, or even understand what it is. It's just not acknowledged.
Yes, you're absolutely right, and I think there's a lot could be said in the answer, but I think the one of the big things is that we become so immersed in a story about who we are and what life is, and often unconsciously. So we're immersed often just in the story which happens to be the hegemony of our time. It happens to be the story that everyone else is telling. Usually that is the case. So we don't even know that it's a story. We just think it's common sense. The fact that our ancestors believe something completely different, we don't even know that often. That we're just, so we're in a story, and that prevents us seeing the most obvious thing, which is why, you know, when, as a stand-up philosopher, one of the things which I see myself doing, which is so silly.
The same as Scotty.
Scotty.
Plagiarized version of Scotty.
is to simply go around to people. I feel like, you know, I come up behind people and whisper, you know, have you noticed life's a mystery? Because often people haven't noticed that. And it's the most obvious thing. The most obvious thing is none of us know what this is.
Well, this isn't
that's
this
the most obvious thing. And when you see that, consciousness changes. So in answer to your question, John, I feel like what often happens is we don't see it because we're so caught up in the concepts, our ideas about, I mean, ideas are great, don't get me wrong, but we're so lost in them, we don't see through them to the reality of the mystery. And then but when it does happen, when we do see through, and like you said, people are having this experience all the time, it becomes very easy afterwards to not lose it. So that I see people a lot have very profound awakenings, and then within a very short period it's easy to lose it because you need to keep revisiting it, like anything. And it can soon, my experience, I don't know what yours is, but if I, even though this is a kind of an exaggeration, but when I'm when I'm at my most immersed in kind of common sense reality, this state of being awake and oneness and love can all sound like airy fairy mumbo jumbo. When I'm most deep awake, the normal everyday sense seems unreal. And wherever you stand, the other can seem unreal. And learning to be able to stand in both, so you see the reality of both, takes quite a bit of journeying to achieve.
Well, that's something I've noticed too. It's I've always put it into the context of like this. If you boil it down to, you know, the basics around me, I live in American culture, obviously, but people go from their day to day. From they get up in the morning, have their pot of coffee, and pot of coffee. They have their cup of coffee. They go to work. They come home. They mow the grass. They watch television. They do their sports on the weekends. Go camping in the summer, but they go through these routines of life. And many people that I know don't even pause to think about anything beyond that. This is their existence. This is what they do. And John and I talk about this stuff an awful lot when we're together, when we're traveling, when we're doing our stuff, is there's something more than what we're experiencing on the surface. And there's something more even than our religious backgrounds. I was in, as all our listeners know, and I've said before, I was very Baptist and very traditional, fundamental Christian evangelical circles in the earlier part of my life. And we did that by rote. And there was no real awake there, if you will, to use your words. Yeah. There was the do it because this is what we do.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, although, you know, it's tricky because part of me wants to go, yes, I know exactly what you mean and I do. And then I also see that people are having all sorts of experiences all the time. It's just they don't talk about them. And one of the reasons for that is because no one else is. And there's a and so what happens is that people are having numinous experiences. I mean, people, life comes and gets you, I think. You know, death comes and gets you. Suffering comes and gets you. Things happen which sooner or later you force you out of that numbness that we think of as normal. And force us to respond in some way. Often, I mean, I worked with people who were dying for a while in my life, and I've been around death a lot, and I see that, you know, when something will touch you sooner or later, and you see the mystery. The question is, do you become terrified and therefore withdraw, or do you open out to it, and that's when these other states can happen?
Do you think most people see those things and have no concept of how they should react, and therefore that's why they retreat? The mystery is, I don't know anything about what's going on here. My father died. I have no idea why that happened or where he's going or what's going on. And they retreat into grief, but that's all the further they can take it. They may get those deeper thoughts about what's going on around us. There's more to this world than what we experience, but many people just will not tap into that.
Yes, and I think part of what I'm attempting to do in my own little life through my books and my teaching is to show, is to offer a way which I'm trying to create as best I can, which draws on the wisdom of the world as human wisdom, not as any particular tradition, and also finds a new vocabulary to go, look, this is, it's okay to be an explorer. You don't have to go to a great guru. You don't have to play a game. You don't have to go to some dogma. You can just be honest with what we find. And if we do that, the numinous, if you like, of life, the depths of life do reveal themselves. And what I see at my, I do these gatherings, I call them retreats for want of a better word, where we get together for a weekend. I, you know, do them all over the world. And what I see is I get a whole, such an interesting bunch of different types of people, and nearly everyone can directly experience this awakening. And when they do, you know it for yourself.
Now, there's a term you used when I was looking at some of your information on the Mystery Experience site, where you talk about, correct my terminology, I'm trying to remember the phrase you used, it's this being, this awakening that's with you, it's like that conscious awake while you're there. It's not going into trance, it's not meditating, it's something that's with you all the time. What did you call that? It's that... I'm trying to find it on your website as I'm talking about it.
Say that again. Describe that again, Scotty.
It's that you encapsulated it, in, I think, in two words. It's this being awake, this being there kind of thing. That this isn't something that you take into this transcendental realm. It's something that's with you. It's here. It's active.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, the philosophy that I've been trying to develop is one which I call paralogical. Because what I'm looking at doing is developing a way of thinking about reality based on an understanding that life is, by its very nature, paradoxical. And what that leads me to is a new way of approaching spirituality, which isn't about rejecting our humanity to achieve our divinity, to use old language. It's about going, look, we're both of those. What I am here meeting you, to put it on a very, you know, one image, I am the universe and I am Tim. As Tim meeting the universe, as Scotty, and the universe as John, what else could we be? If we just meet on the surface, we're just these separate individuals, and that's powerful and interesting. But if we seek backwards, if we sink backwards into our deeper identity, there's a profound sense of oneness which arises, and we can meet in both of those. So it's not either this or that, it's both this and that.
Okay.
Jim, do you mind if I come in here?
Did that make sense?
That made a lot of sense.
Perfect sense.
I want to probe it a little differently, but let me let John try to get a word in.
I just wanted to voice. Do you think there's a danger out there? And thankfully, I've been through your website and listened to what you've said. Even just in the past 20 minutes, I've already made my conclusions with regards to this. And so I'm not casting any dispersions here. But do you think there's a danger out there with these kind of guristic spiritual gurus who try to tap into this awakening? And I know we're all three of us are now speaking on from the same page. We all understand what we're talking about here. But do you think there is a problem out there, and it has been taken advantage of, especially now during this particular time that we're going through at the moment, where there is more of a conscious awakening, if I can use those kind of new agey words. But do you think there is a problem out there with these gurus?
Yes, massive. I hate it. I don't feel. You know, I feel, wherever I go, I'm going to end up a maverick just because it's my nature. So I don't like being in spiritual circles. I don't feel at home amongst, often when, if I'm ended up presenting, I feel much more, with a conference or something, I feel much more resonance with the audience than I do the other speakers. Not because I don't like them as individuals, they're often lovely. It's just because I see games being played. And I'm not just interested. I started this when I was 12. I'm now 55. I've seen a lot. And it's just boring. And what I'm interested in is something which is much more authentic than that. And I want to meet other people who are also looking authentically. Now, the problem that you have, I think, is that wherever you look in life, you get this ambivalence. That's part of the paradox. So in spirituality, at its best, you get something which is very raw, very real, and very deep. At its worst, you get something which is preposterous. Which is full of itself and really is just, just going to have the opposite effect to which it's designed. But you also get that in science. You know, at its very best, you get something which is, thorough and deep and authentic. And at its worst, you get something which is hubristic, narrow, and reductionist. I guess it's with everything.
Good answer.
Oh, very good answer. And I think that that's probably a good time, a good place to go out to our break for this first half hour with Timothy Freak. Folks, you are listening to Timothy Freak from TheMysteryExperience.com. Go check out his website, and you can see some of his books. We're going to come back after about, 4 minutes or so after this break, right here on the Intrepid Radio program.